Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 1st. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and back with me and back in Tokyo, in cozy Tokyo, is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Cozy Tokyo. This is your idea of an April Fool's gag. I got her.
You know, I wanted to do an April Fool's gag, and then I decided to call it off. We don't have time for it.
Gotcha. Okay. Anyway, I'm back from the WBC, and it was a wonderful tournament, but really glad to be home, you know, and the Bay Area is home, but, you know, I'm from there, but Tokyo is home.
Well, welcome
Does that
back,
make any sense? Does that make any sense?
It means you're home. Welcome back.
Okay. Thank you.
And you brought this freezing cold weather with you. What's wrong with you? Put it back.
I did not bring it. It was nice a couple of days ago here. It was Deanna who brought it with her yesterday.
Oh, okay. All right. One of our blogger friends. Hi, Deanna. We hope to see you soon. We are going to see you soon, probably next weekend. So we're looking forward to it.
Those of us who don't have to work late on over the weekend, yeah.
Yeah. Work. It always gets in the way of life.
Or sometimes it is life.
Okay. Well, life on today's show includes an interview with Fred Lewis of the Hiroshima Carp. We're going to discuss opening weekend. We're going to talk about some record chasers and answer some listener questions. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right. For more information on One World Sports, go to oneworldsports.com and learn how to watch live Giants home games if you live in the United States. All right, so I caught up with Fred Lewis the other day at Tokyo Dome. It was Saturday, and it was the middle game of a three-game series with the Giants, and they really played well. The Carp really played well, and they came out winless of this series. But they had a tie, which is nice.
They had a tie despite the new rules or the
old
abolition
rules.
Of the three-and-a-half-hour curfew.
Right, the old rules. Meet the old rules, same as the new rules who are old. Or something?
Who fed you those lines?
Who? Whoever's on first.
Oh, you can see that one for miles.
And miles.
Indeed.
All right, let's stop this before we scare some of the younger listeners. All right, so Fast Freddy, he came up with the San Francisco Giants. I think his first game was in September of 2006. Now he has some power, he has some speed, he can play the field. There's nothing bad about him playing in that park out there in Hiroshima. I think if you look up his numbers on Fangraphs and his story on Wikipedia, it'd be more than I could tell you and probably better than I could tell you here. And we talked to him before we did the interview. We were chatting in the dugout. Some of the other reporters and Fred Lewis were talking in the dugout. And it seems like he came here to Japan as an alternative. He wasn't really trying to get here. Sometimes we talk to players who are, their aim is to get here. They're looking for another opportunity. And it didn't seem like Fred wanted to come here necessarily. He just said, you know what, this is an opportunity that's out there. I guess I'll take it.
Right. Well, he was, I had seen talk about him, I said the last couple of years, but at least last year, somebody was saying, I wonder when Fred Lewis is going to come to Japan, and bingo, bango, there he was. And I asked him, and he said, no, it wasn't like I was trying to come, but people had said, what do you think about Japan? He's going like, wow. You know, it's like the other side of the world, isn't it? It was
right.
That kind of response. It wasn't really on his radar screen, other than that people did play baseball in Japan, and it wasn't on his destination of choice, among his choices of destinations.
Right. And this is a guy from Mississippi, and I know that he was drafted and opted not to sign the first time he was drafted, and he went to school to play and all that stuff, and he was pretty much close to home. So I don't think Japan really was on his radar at all, but he's here. Now, he's got some speed. I think, and he talked about the fact that he lost two or three steps, which I don't know if I believe that, but he is 32.
Let's put it this way. You don't see people who are major league athletes
mm-hmm.
or – athletes at the best of their profession getting faster at the age of 32 than they were at 27. It's sort of like, if you're good enough to play at that level, it's highly unlikely you're going to be able to improve that much, going against the natural physical declines that the body is vulnerable to. Yeah. So it's almost without a doubt that he has lost a couple of steps. He used to be able to fly. Playing in AT&T Park was a natural for him. It's a big park. A guy could run and and has a gap power. It was great for that park. He was this kind of a Shinjo type player in that respect. Although I don't want to cast dispersions on Fred. Shinjo is not a very clever player. I think Fred's got to be smarter than that.
And, no offense, Shinjo.
Shinjo.
We'll give you the ego back at the door. We'll sell it to you for a nickel.
I'll tell you, Shinjo is a tremendous outfielder. Had a tremendous arm. Wasn't one of the, didn't have particularly good at bats, but you know he had some bat speed and he could do a few things. It just wasn't bad leadoff. So he was in that setup, and now he's in Japan with the Carp, which are a really interesting team, as I sort of discovered after we discussed them last week's show.
Yeah, well, I'm sticking with my pick. I mean, I didn't really see, and I think Fast Freddy, he calls himself. I think Fast Freddy can help them. But as we've seen, especially in this weekend series, they're 0-2, and they really should be 3-0. They had control of these games, and they made a couple of mistakes here and there. And then today, they had the outfield drawn in, trying to cut off one run, and then they ended up cutting off their hands and losing the game. So, I mean, you know, let the run score. It's only, you know, you haven't lost the game yet. But they lost it on a pop fly that would have been an out because they were playing in. And then the other day, the manager decides to bring in a right-hander to face a fastball-hitting left-handed batter. And the pitcher throws him a fastball, and he hits it. Surprise, surprise. So, I mean, they could have won two games. The middle game, I think, probably was going to be a tie. I don't think they had that many chances, but it was a good game. But
yeah, well, over the long haul, I think those are small things. You would like to see them do better. You know, get more results out of them, but hey, it's two games. You know, you can play better than somebody, you know, seven times and lose seven times out of 10 and lose eight games. So
it's true. It's true.
So,
all right. Well, let's take a listen to what Freddie had to say. All right. We're joined by Fred Lewis this week. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. You're here in Japan. What are your strongest skills as a player and as a teammate? And how do you fit in with this club?
My strongest skill is, of course, speed. And, of course, I'm going to, when I at least get, you know, ball in the gap or somewhere to the fence, I'm going to try to get an extra, you know, the extra base or whatever. But I'm a great teammate, you know. I'm very quiet, you know. Some say over the years, you know, I became, you know, a little bit more talkative, and you know, I'm getting out of that quiet stage, you know, and you know, slowly becoming a leader. So you know, I try to lead by example, and you know, I play hard on the field, and you know, I try to make the great plays, and you know, I work hard on my defense and you know, etc.
What is being a great teammate? What does that entail?
Well, you know, picking each other up. You know, basically, you know, just going to the guy, hey, you know, you get him next time, you know, patting him on the back, and, you know, also, you know, picking the guys up in the outfield. You know, the guy give up a hit, you know, I go up there and, you know, try to make that great catch, and, you know, he come at the end, you know, at the end of the game or three outs or whatever, you know, hey, great job, great play. So I, you know, that's part of being a great teammate.
Some would say the language barrier seems like it's a big deal, especially when we're watching TV and we see you see the foreign players talking to some of the Japanese players. Is it a problem?
It's kind of a problem, but then again, you know, when I first got here, you know, I was very shy, you know, to talk to the foreign guys, and very shy going places, you know, scared to go places, you know, not knowing how to communicate with my teammates, you know, is a big problem to me, I think, you know, but the good thing having a, you know, a translator, you know, explaining some stuff that goes on out here on the field, you know, and he explains it to them, you know, in Japanese, and you know, that's the good thing about having a translator.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Now, what have you learned so far about playing in Japan so far through camp and through the first game?
Well, I mean, there's no lollygagging, you know. It's, you know, they want you to play hard at all times, even ball down the line, you know. It's a sure double. They want you to fire it in there. They want you to hustle to it and, you know, bust your butt to it and make a hard throw in there. And, you know, that's what I learned here. And, you know, they play the game the right way. They, you know, never disrespect it. You know, they hustle back to the dugout if they strike out. Even, you know, with three outs, they never argue a call. They always come back to the dugout and nothing, you know, they never get mad at one another. They always, you know, quiet, and they go back about their business.
And what adjustments have you made so far to your game since coming in?
Well, the main thing I keep telling myself, you know, just, you know, stay calm. It's a different league, and, you know, it's going to be a lot of, it's not going to be too many fastballs. You know, you got to be patient, and, you know, you got to be patient in the box. You can't go and swinging at their pitches. And the adjustments that I made is to try to be calm, you know, and in the batter's box, and try not to take too many pitches and try not to miss my pitch.
What is that? I mean, when you say stay calm, did you play the game real excited and energetically before coming here?
Yeah, I mean, I played the game with a lot of enthusiasm. And what I mean by that, you know, staying calm is, you know, when I first got here, I'm like, man, I got mad at the pitcher because he wasn't throwing a fastball. And, you know, Major League guys throw off their fastball. And over here, it's more splits than more breaking balls than anything. You know, they may throw you one fastball, but they may not throw it.
All right, now you came up with the San Francisco Giants and you had two seasons of regular playing time. And then you were traded on April 15th, was it 2010? What was the level of shock for you when that happened?
Well, I didn't know what was happening. You know, I didn't know what was going on. But, you know, when I got to an organization that wanted me, you know, I was, like, very thankful and very, you know, excited because I went to Toronto. And Toronto, I didn't know that they was watching me, but they traded for me. So anytime a team traded for you, I mean, it's a good thing. And so I went to Toronto. I had a great year there, and, you know, I was just happy to go over there and play.
Now, you had a decent season with Toronto, but then playing time has gone south for you now. And now here you are in Japan. What's your plan going forward at 32 years old?
My plan is to show the world that I still have it, and I can play, and I can play on any level that, you know, I'm capable of playing on. And so anywhere that I'm wanted and that I'm gonna play is, you know, a great thing for me, and, you know, a great thing for my family. But also, you know, I'm just gonna be calm here and play baseball like they want me to play.
What kind of goals did you set? What kind of numbers do you want to put up, or what kinds of things have you laid out for yourself in terms of results?
Well, I mean, result-wise, you know, I want to bat over course over 300, and, you know, I just want to do well. You know, I just want to have a breakout season, and I haven't had over 15 home runs over course of my career. You know, something that I want to, you know, lean on this year.
All right, now this organization, I know it's new for you, but how does it compare to some of the organizations that you played for back in the States?
You know, it's baseball. All of it is baseball. So, I mean, it's you can't compare it to the States, you know, because the game is much faster. And, you know, it's just really just the game of baseball. I mean, and these guys over here, I mean, it's their culture, and they love it, you know. And Major League Baseball is my culture, and, you know, they love it there. And, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it has the similarities.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be looking for you to do some damage out there on the field and help this team win. It hasn't had a great season in a long time. It's pretty much due for a good season.
Oh, yeah. You know, we're going to put up and, you know, do some great things out there on the baseball field. And, you know, a lot of people not expecting us to be in it. But, you know, we're going to do a lot. And we're going to surprise a lot of people.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot for joining us. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, Fred. Well, thank you very much for the chat. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, it was really nice meeting Fred. He's a very positive, likable, upbeat guy. If he says shy, shy is, I guess in respect to being on the bench and being part of the clubhouse, maybe he was a little, unassertive
mm-hmm.
might be the better word.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I hope that he can, you know, I'm sure he'll be a positive influence with the Carp, and simply, you know, he's been there somewhere. He's not gonna, I think that will work actually, work out well in his favor, because certainly nobody in Japan wants to hear somebody come and say, I'm in the majors, this is how we do it in the majors, blah, 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 blah. You know, they've heard it before.
I'm sure they have, yeah.
But, you know, to see somebody who's very serious about his work ethic, and who wants to pick guys up, as he put it, and, you know, and cheer guys up and praise them when they do things that are praiseworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's not always easy to do when you're a professional and there's so much pressure. But obviously he cares about, you know, the guys he's playing with. So,
yeah, I really did see the shyness there. I mean, you know, he was talking to us. I mean, you can hear him peeling off his batting gloves as at the beginning of the talk, and I when I went to listen to it, I thought, what's that sound? You know, I'm like, I've done it again. I messed up the interview for the show, but it's him peeling off his batting gloves. You know, he's very humble. He's a very humble guy, and you learn to appreciate that, because a lot of guys come here with the attitude that it is their way or no way or the highway or whatever, and then they're not willing to adjust. And he wasn't specific about what adjustments he's making,
mm-hmm.
But you can tell he's going to try to make adjustments to get used to this brand of baseball here.
Well, I mean, it's part of the game. You know, right. if you're not willing to make adjustments, you might as well just make your reservations. You know,
yes.
For the return trip, because and that goes not whether you're playing in Japan or Korea or the Dominican Republic, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Now, I really, really liked his take on the Japanese reaction to strikeouts or bad calls or something. He's saying,
yeah.
You know, they never argue a call and they never get mad at one another. And, you know, remember, I think it was the first year of our podcast that I said, you know, I want to see more of that passion. I want to see some guys screaming at an umpire. I want to see a guy fighting, not fighting, but yelling at his teammate to hustle or something like that, because we don't get that stuff here. And sometimes you need, I mean, I was an in-your-face kind of a basketball player. I was the coach on the floor who probably the other players didn't like, because I was telling people where to go, where to be, how to get there, how fast to get there, how high to jump.
They were telling you, how fast can you stop talking?
No, most of the times I was the older guy on the court anyway, so they would listen to me on some of my teams. And I really was, I thought the game through, but we don't see enough of these guys yelling at least umpires. Sometimes, you know, they stand there, they throw equipment, but I want to see a guy say, you know what, you really missed this call, you know, and we gotta figure out something here, because you're blowing it. You know, you missed this one 2 weeks ago in a game against the Giants, you missed this, you know, start listing all the calls that they missed. But I mean, obviously these guys aren't perfect, but it's that passion that's missing sometimes for me.
Yeah.
So I like that comment from him.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And, you know, this is what I love about all the interviews, is that every, you know, we can talk to 50 people about, you know, two or three different subjects, and we're probably going to get about 40 to 45 different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that as professionalism, it's, you know, it's certainly the opinion of somebody who's been here 6 weeks, or I guess he's been here 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you take that with a, you know, for what it's worth, but, you know, he is there watching it, and that's his opinion, and I like that balance it gives us. I think there are Japanese guys who do blow their top and who do show emotion, but that's usually those people don't succeed in Japan. I don't want to say you know, some bring out some tired cliche or anything, but it's really hard to succeed in Japan unless you're one of the guys. You know, you can be, there's not many Hiromitsu Ochiais around. There's a few of them. There's a few iconic class, but it's hard to be the guy who bucks the system. And the system says, you know, you don't argue too much. Although, of course, in Japan, you can argue with the umpires because you could used to be able to shove them around and knock them down without any fear of punishment.
Right. I remember.
Oh, I mean, this is a step in the right direction. I hate to see arguing with the umpires. And the reason I hate to see it is because it doesn't do the game any good. It helps your team in the sense that if you don't do it, it hurts your team. Now, what they need to do is say, you argue with the umpires, we're just going to throw your butt into the clubhouse because and go for everybody, and then we're back to square one.
Well, I don't mean stand there for taking up the whole 5 minutes before you get the automatic ejection if you're a manager. I don't mean that kind of arguing. Just getting in an umpire's face and say, you know what, you really screwed that up. Why don't you get it right next time? And then you walk back to the dugout. But these guys, they don't say anything. They don't do anything. Well, they're like robots.
That's because you watch too many games in Tokyo Dome, because Hara pretty much never questions anything. And it's not a bad thing. In my case, it's not a bad thing. It's a cultural issue to some degree. But you know, is it a bad thing? That it can be. Yeah, it can hurt your team. It can hurt your team. But again, it's a negative thing that can hurt your team if you don't do. It's like if you don't do it, you're hurting your team because you're not being as nasty and counterproductive as the other manager. You know, the other guy's hurting the game, but he's helping his team. Well, you have to hurt the game and help the team too, or you'll hurt your team as well. So I hate it. I hate it from that. It's what they call, economists call rent taking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're basically forcing the game to the lowest common denominator, and you're not producing anything. It doesn't make the game any better.
I just want to see some passion, man. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not talking about holding up the game for 5 minutes. But anyway, I like that comment, and I'm hoping that the Carp can do well this year. Like I said, I'm not after the even just after this first series. I don't know that they're on the right path. I know they're going to be a little bit better defensively. I actually had a talk with Brian Bullington before the game as well.
Oh,
and he thinks they're going to be a little bit better defensively with Higashide out, because some of the younger guys are more talented defensively. But well, and then you got Fred back there in the outfield as well. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, we saw a little bit of that. Abe at shortstop looks like the real deal. Now, of course, Tsuyogi's the regular shortstop, but Abe is the real deal. Now, Kikuchi has been in his brief pro career, he's been all over the place, second, short, and third. And I think really he needs to stick. Now, here, this is the thing for him. This is going to be a year for him to get it done at second base. And if he can raise his game at second base with Eldred, and if Dobayashi, you know, he can't get a lot worse.
He cannot.
And Eldred showed some pretty good. She's pretty quick.
Yeah.
At first base. I was very pleased with that. And Kurihara is quick, although Kurihara doesn't always think about what he's doing.
We know that from last year.
Right. He doesn't always think things through, but he's very athletic at first base. So, yeah, I think the defense will be better. Of course, if Jun Hirose is healthy in right field, then, you know, they've got a gun.
Yeah.
They got a gun in right field. So that's, yeah, it can't hurt. You know, the question with the Carp is, are they going to be able to put the little, you know, sort of like see the big picture, you know, focus on, you know, winning games as opposed to just getting, you know, playing well, or, you know, playing with heart, or whatever you want to call it, you know, putting all the pieces together into a coherent whole is the big question for the Carp, because they're so young.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interject here. This is the second week that you've mentioned heart. And I remember last year that we talked about, and you said, well, look, you couldn't, there was no tangible way to measure heart. But anyway, I don't want to get off on the tangent here. I want to stay on track. The pitching staff is going to keep them in a lot of games. I think they're talented there. They're going to be better defensively. So let's hope they can win some of these games instead of figuring out how to lose them. And I think they'll be there. They're going to be close at the end. I think I had them fourth anyway. So we'll see how they do.
I think one of the Bay Stars or the Carp is going to reach the playoffs. I don't know which one it's going to be, but that's my sense of this season
after the weekend.
I had that sense going into the weekend, but just from looking at the teams, and you know, I had to write the Kyoto News Central League preview this week, and so having looked at all the teams, I had this impression that one of the Carp or the Bay Stars is gonna make it.
All right. Well, thank you again, Freddie, and we'll be seeing you around. Good luck, bud.
Indeed. Yes. Look forward to seeing you at the ballpark next time.
All right, so opening weekend, I got to go to that middle game, and I saw Sugano pitch for the first time live, and, you know, we had the grand slams, the comebacks, the extra inning games, the video replay, home runs, debut at bats, the double-sworded samurai, had a couple hits and an RBI, and the two back-to-back 9 hours worth of baseball out in Chiba in two nights. I mean, it was a great opening weekend. What was your biggest impression from the weekend?
Gee, there were so many. I guess it was the rookie debuts, the three rookies,
the three amigos.
Indeed, Fujinami set a record by starting his starting Hanshin's third game of the season, the record in the draft era since 1966. He was the quickest pitcher to go from high school to starting a game in NPB. And the previous record was four set by Matsuzaka in 99 and equaled by Hideaki Wakui in 2005. So that was kind of interesting. And then the other two rookie debuts, of course, was Ohtani, who is a pitcher, who was also who along with Fujinami was one of the top of the marquee blue chip draft choices last year before he said he was going to go to the United States. And he started in right field and played in all three games in the batter's box. He has yet to pitch in the Pacific League.
Right.
And then Saturday we had so we had Friday's debut of Ohtani in right field. And then Saturday we had Tomoyuki Sugano
with the Giants,
It's so many convoluted stories that sort of intertwine here. I don't want to really get into them too much, but Sugano is a former college star, and he did not play baseball at all last year, or he would not have been eligible. Had he done so, he would not have been eligible for the 2012 draft.
Right.
But he sat out the year and worked out with his former college team, you know, throughout the bullpen, basically. And he looked pretty good. He had pretty decent command, good stuff. Looks like he's going to be a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, I have to apologize right away for feeding the big hype machine, but I have to say that the gaudy debut for Shohei Ohtani with the Fighters was my weekend impression because, you know, I've seen him pitch. I still haven't seen him pitch live, but I've seen enough on TV to know I want to see him pitch live. He's a guy I'd sit down there and pay to see because the movement on his fastball, the way it tails, man, it's just good stuff. But the way he struck out in his first at bat. Someone on TV said it was three pitches. Then you and I talked at Tokyo Dome the other day. He said it was four pitches. Anyway, he struck out looking in his first at bat. Then he doubles in his second at bat. And later in the game, he gets an RBI single and helps get a run on the board. So, you know, they say goodbye to Kensuke Tanaka in the offseason, and then they bring in this kid who's going to actually bring in more tickets and more people, especially if he hits like this. Now, still, and the thing is, I talked to Bullington before the game, and he actually asked me some questions about him. He says, how are they going to use him? What do you think they're going to do? In terms of what order, if he's going to play in the same game at different positions, what order is it going to be? And Brian said, well, he's got to warm that arm up first if he's going to pitch. You know, he's got to be in the bullpen. So it would have to be bullpen and then position. And once he's warmed up. But obviously if he comes in as a pitcher and he stays in the game, right. then the pitch the and he doesn't continue the pitch, then the pitcher has to bat.
Correct.
So it's a real mess. It's going to be fun to watch and see how those things develop. But I'm sorry that, like I said, to you know, spread the hype like this, but I can't wait to go and see a game where he plays two ways. I think it's going to be really cool.
Well, I personally don't think he's going to play two ways in the same game that often. I think more or less what's going to happen is it is going to go to the old standard usage, which is you have a guy who pitches and he's a spot starter or in the rotation. Mm-hmm. You know, when he's, if he's good enough to pitch in the rotation, they're probably going to let him pitch in the rotation. And then on one of the days between his starts, he'll, you know, they'll bring him in and, you know, start him in right field.
You think so? Because what about it's throwing his bullpens on off days, and doesn't he need a mental break, you know, to get if he's going to be preparing to face pitchers and preparing to face batters, he's got to have a mental break in there somewhere. So you got to just give him a day off just to, I mean, they have.
But I'm saying you could, well, they get, you know, they take 5 or 6 days off between starts anyway. They could, you know, you could play one of those guys. It's not going to kill him.
Just the one.
I'd love to see it. You want him to focus on his different tasks. You don't want to give him, you don't want to have two useless players out there. You want to have two guys who are contributing. So if you want him to bat twice a week, I think they're going to test the waters and see how it goes. But that's what I would do, which means absolutely nothing.
don't devalue your opinion so much. Let me do it.
indeed, that's what you're here for.
I think if you look at it this way, if they dumped Itoy, and obviously right. that was a dump job, so now they have this hole out there. Now, if the guy can play in right field, you need him out there, but he can also pitch. And if he's a starting pitcher and if he's that valuable, do you really want a guy like that running the bases? Because I saw a play – I think it was the first game that, you know, I just didn't like the way he was going into home plate. He could have gotten hurt. And anywhere in there, if he's a guy in your rotation you value that much, I don't think you want him running around the bases that often. I mean, pitchers usually do it once a week.
Yeah. Well, that was the Yankees. The Yankees, when mm-hmm. Wong Chien-Ving got hurt running the bases, they said, the National League, how can we have pitchers running the bases? It's dangerous to the game of baseball. It's like they've been doing it for 100 years. So
get out of that car. You could kill yourself.
Exactly.
And others.
So, exactly. Anyway, so there's a bunch of different things they can do. He came off the bench twice. Ugamori is probably going to be the main right fielder as opposed to Ohtani. I think they're just going to, they're going to have to figure something out that works. It's all trial and error. This is something that really hasn't been done in Japan for, I could tell you, actually, I'm going to say 37 years.
Yeah, I thought you said it was 1960.
76.
76, okay. All
right. 76.
Well, he's a tall guy. I'm not sure that I like his stance at the plate sometimes, but the thing is he never has looked off balance to me. He mistimes a pitch, he doesn't seem to be – off balance and his footing is bad or anything. He seems very competent and capable as a hitter, but I've seen him throw too, and you just cannot waste an arm like that, whether it's bullpen or not. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think they're trying to figure out, and I saw Johnny Kuroki, an interview with him, and he said that the plan is that they're going to use him both ways. They just haven't figured it out at the moment. They haven't figured out a plan.
Right.
And if he's going to be a starter and you're going to have him throwing every 5 days, I think you're going to have to work in some extra off days for him in terms of getting him out of the outfield and getting him to concentrate on pitching just before he goes out to the mound and the mental break.
I'm saying he might start one day a week in the outfield. He might, come in off the bench once or twice. But basically, he's a guy who has a lot of value in that respect. But again, I think they're going to take it slow and see, sort of like ease him into the different issues he's going to have to deal with, because, it's no good throwing him into the deep end on both sides of the pool at the same time.
That's
stressful.
Yeah, I got you. All right. Now, how about the gutty little Eagles down in Fukuoka winning that series? I thought that was kind of a surprise.
We had another rookie debut. an Eagles game, an Eagles opener. Right. We had, can you even remember his name with the other guys?
Norimoto, I forgot his first name.
Well, very good. Very good, Norimoto. Pitcher.
Yeah. And he pitched he did okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's I think a college guy. But he was the first Pacific League player Pacific League rookie to pitch on opening day in ages. So he had a lot of that going on this weekend, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, well that pitching choice was kind of a surprise, and so was Oryx pitching Chihiro Kaneko on opening day, and he hadn't thrown a pitch in the preseason, not one ball in a game.
He had injury troubles most of last year, and he had tweaked his arm somewhere in camp, and he pitched. He might have pitched in a couple of practice games, and that was it.
Yeah, and he goes eight innings and gets a no decision because they couldn't figure out a score that day. And the Oryx, you know, the Oryx and the Carp, they look like the same teams as old. You know, they're going to try to figure out how to lose games, and they did. They won today. They won on Sunday to avoid a sweep, which is good, which is the same thing that happened with my Dragons. they had to win on Sunday to avoid a sweep. You know, I like the way the Bay Stars started out. I thought it was, certainly the past coming back to haunt the Dragons. But did you hear that comment that Takagi made before the season started?
About Blanco was a negative on the team and he was unreliable.
No, you told me that one.
Okay. I don't know which comment you are referring to.
The one I'm talking about in particular is the one that they said most of your players, a lot of your players went, you know, to the move to the Bay Stars in the off season, and his comment was, "Yeah, we wanted to help them beat the Giants."
Well,
turns out they need him to beat the Bay Stars. Can we have him when you play you guys, and then you can give him to you when you play the Giants?
Jason Cosgrave of the Japan Times and I were shadowing Tony Blanco after the end of the Climax series, his finale with the Dragons, and the reporters were asking him about the rumors that the Bay Stars were interested in him, and he says, "No, I love Nagoya. I want to stay here in Nagoya, and I want to contribute." And he didn't stay in Nagoya, but he certainly contributed in Nagoya over the weekend.
He certainly did. One of the things, you know, he had this RBI single to right with two runners on that scored two runners in that middle game. And one of the announcers said, where were hits like that when he was playing with the Dragons? They were trying to get him to hit the ball to right field. Not trying to hit it over the fence, but just hit the ball to right field for singles for the whole time he was there. He never did it, they said. I don't believe that. I remember him.
I don't believe that either.
I remember him hitting the ball to right a lot, but a lot of times it was for power. He'd hit it off the wall instead of at the wall. So, that brings us in with a seamless transition into the main record chasers here. And the biggest guy out there, or the closest guy to a big milestone.
Alex is pretty big.
He's a big dude. Is Alex Ramirez with the Yokohama Bay Stars. Now, in that series between the Dragons
out of here.
Between the Dragons and the Bay Stars, Dragons catcher Motonobu Tanishige set a Central League record by starting his 20th consecutive opening day game behind the plate.
Well, and of course, that's pretty amazing because he really wasn't any good when he was a young player. I mean, he was just like a big star. He was a big, you know, kid. He came out of high school and Yokohama needed some names. And so here's our rookie catcher. Here's our young catcher. And he was lousy, but he ain't lousy now. And he's hitting like he wants to pass Ramichan in the hit total.
Yeah. Yeah, now he's chasing 2,000 hits as well, but Ramichan is only 3 hits away now as of Sunday night, and he was 20 something. He had a couple hits today. All right, so Tanishige is about, I think he's 19 away.
Right.
It might be fewer than that.
And another base star, Norihiro Nakamura, I think he was 42 at the start of the season. I think he's got 3, so he's in his 30s now.
I had 32 for him.
Oh, was it 32? So he's in his 20s. Well, it'll be the last time he sees his 20s.
Wow. All right, so I think Ramirez is going to get it. I want to go this week and see if I can get to a game, but I don't see any way I can get out to Yokohama.
No, they're playing the Giants Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they're going to Jingu on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, although there's an 80% chance of rain for Tuesday, so.
All right, I don't think there's any way I can get out to Yokohama Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday to see any of those games. I'm off on Friday, so I could probably go to a game if they're around, but it looks like, and they're at Jingu, so that's good.
Yep.
If he holds off, the Giants pitchers hold down, I can get out there on Friday. That would be cool. But either way, I'll probably try to get out there and do an interview with him. Hope he gets that mark. He'd be the first foreign player to reach 2,000 hits. And he's also chasing 400 home runs.
Well, you know, it would be interesting. If he got it at Jingu, he would be the second former Swallow in 2 years to get his 2,000th hit at Jingu Stadium.
And the other one was Miyamoto.
That's in Inaba.
Inaba? Oh, Inaba. Former. You said former. That's right.
I did.
I'm listening. See, I listened to you.
You have proof of purchase, baby. Send in your box tops. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, and I just, being a Swallows fan, although it's just kind of a quirky thing, but the Swallows on that 2001 Central League Japan Series winning team, they had, how many guys had 2,000 hits on that roster? You got three of them in the last sentence.
Okay.
And the fourth would be Furuta.
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed him. Wow.
Okay. There might have been somebody else, but I think it was just those four.
All right. So a couple other guys who are chasing some milestones. Fumiya Nishiguchi of the Lions. He needs 18 wins to get to 200. I don't think that's happening.
He's never won 18 games in his career.
And Yoshitomo Tani of the Giants is 86 hits away from 2,000. I don't think he's going to get that. But if
for some reason he has to play, he'll get it.
Definitely.
If for some reason he has to play 120 games, he'll get it. But otherwise, no.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Aikawa of the Yakult Swallows, he's close to 1,000 hits. He's fewer than 10 away.
Well, 1,000 hits, you know, give the guy a bus token or something. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Well, even
it's time for SmackDown time right now. Your 1,000 hits across the face.
Exactly. Go. Here's your beanie prize or something. I don't mean to be rude. It is an accomplishment.
Sure, it is.
But the milestone that people care about in Japan is 2,000. Now, here's something that kind of struck me as interesting. I was curious how many people with 2,000 hits in Japan who have been retired for more than 10 years are in the Hall of Fame. What percentage do you think that would be? Most of them?
10%?
It's actually, well, here's the funny thing. There's sort of a line about 2,150 hits. And there are, I think, 11 guys over 2,150 hits in Japan. There might be a few more. But there's only two of them who basically have been eligible to be in the Hall of Fame who aren't in it.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys who are long past, you know, they're long past their shelf life for Hall of Fame eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get guys around 2,000, it's like nobody's in the Hall of Fame. So unless they've done something else. But I'm thinking, you know, Ramirez, 2,000 hits, he get 2,100 by the end of the season without too much trouble. Now
he stays healthy.
If he stays as healthy as he was last year, if he's less healthy than he was last year, he can get 100 hits. He's basically, the way I look at it, he's 2 years away from being in the Japanese Hall of Fame. Because if you looked at the players who are in the Hall of Fame, I know this isn't really the place for this discussion, so we'll save it for a later day. But if you look at the guys in the Hall of Fame, how many people have played on three Japan Series championships, have won two MVPs, have 2,000 hits, have 300-plus home runs? And the answer is pretty darn few who aren't in the Hall of Fame. And the answer is pretty much nobody. So that's kind of going to – I think it's going to be interesting to see how the media responds to a foreigner's 2,000th hit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, already they're talking about it, but it hasn't been this big countdown thing like it was for Kanemoto and those guys. But
sure,
we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one is from Mark in Livermore, California, and he says, "Hi, I just wanted to drop you a note and let you know how much I really enjoy the podcast." He says, "I really enjoyed the Japanese League." His question is, "Do you know if they will be using the dead ball again this year?" Now, Mark, at the risk of sounding pedantic, it's not really called the Japanese League. It's called Japan Pro Baseball, and we want to just dispel any rumors or any what misnomers out there, if there are any. I don't know how I hear people and announcers especially referring to the league out here as the Japanese Major Leagues, and it drives me nuts because there's nothing Major League Baseball about it. I mean, in terms of we're just Americanizing the terminology so that we can grasp it better or something. I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
I'm fair enough to call them Japan. I would call them Japan's major leagues because in the sense of Japan, they are major leagues.
Yeah, I could go with that. But there's two leagues. It's a Pacific League, Central League, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Appreciate the mail, definitely.
Sure.
Yes, they're using the low impact ball. Although I've seen a couple home runs already that look suspicious to me. Like they've brought back a couple of those old ones. I've seen some pitches that were pretty good and some swings that were pretty mediocre and some balls that went out. One was Makita's home run, down in Fukuoka. It must have been a sweet spot home run because it didn't look like he got around on the pitch. It didn't look like he hit it all that hard. And I don't think he thought it was gone. And it went out. So
I would almost, I know I've seen a couple as well that made me think, you know, the bad old days were back, but we'll see.
The bad old days.
Well, you know, of the Tokyo Dome specials, those opposite, you know, high fastball, high fly to the opposite field that, you know, lands in the first row like a mortar shot. You know, this is the kind of home run that Tomohiro Nioka and Shinosuke Abe used to make a living off of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, again, the reason they brought they had Mizuno come in and they developed it. Because it was a new ball, right? It wasn't a ball that
exactly.
They had already had. So they developed this ball. It was supposed to be. Right. It was, the reason was twofold. One was to get all the teams on the same page using the same ball, because if you went to different parks, sometimes you had to use different balls.
Correct.
And the other was to get the ball closer to the specs of the Major League Baseball.
Well, that's
International Baseball.
Exactly.
International Baseball.
Here's the problem. And this is why I think this ball is going to be kaput after 2013 because of what happened in the WBC. They got a ball that wasn't anything like what anybody was using, and the Japanese pitchers had the toughest transition. Now, Mizuno makes a ball for the Cuban leagues that's very close to the Major League ball. They didn't have any trouble adjusting, and when they were asking a reporter asked Cuban manager Victor Mesa if his players had trouble adjusting from their Mizuno balls to WBC balls. He said, "Look, what you think we throw rocks in Cuba? You think we're throwing soccer balls? No, it's a baseball. What's the problem? It's a baseball."
Right.
And I say, "Well, he didn't understand because he's not used to these little mushy kumquats that pass for baseballs in Japan."
Mushy kumquats. All right. All right, so that's the answer to your question, Mark. Thank you very much. All right, so this next one is from Dave in Baltimore, and this is Dave who came out to visit us, the listener who met us at the WBC. Now, he says, "You know, I always enjoy the show, but I really liked the discussion you guys had about the ballparks in the last show, especially now that I've been to a couple games. It was nice to see my impressions of the ballparks confirmed, and I really liked Yokohama and Jingu." He goes on to talk about some other stuff, and then he comes up with the question, "To what do you attribute the fact that Japan has been much more successful in the World Baseball Classic than they have been in the Olympics? Does it have something to do with being more prepared for a late winter, early spring tournament than their opponents, or is it just plain luck?"
Wow. In the sense of it's a small sample size, it could very well be a combination of those two. I think that I've always thought Japan is more suited dogmatic. Their Japanese doctrine is better suited for for a tournament in March, because they play up opening day as some sort of holy crusade. Being ready for opening day is sort of like the answer to the season. So I think that is an advantage for them. The other thing might just be luck. Now, in the Olympics, here's the other thing. In the Olympics, part of the problem that the Japanese Players Union has had with the WBC is that it takes them away from their preparation for the season. It takes them away from their teams when they're preparing for the all-important opening day.
Right.
And now, however, when you do it in the middle of the season, it's again a big deal. And, you know, they don't disrupt the season like MLB says they would have to if they allowed their best players to go. You know, they just keep playing the season. They'll do it with a slightly reduced schedule, but they keep playing the season, or they were playing the season during the Olympics. So I think that is an issue. Is everybody ready for it? Do other teams not count? I don't know. Japan has played. Here's another thing. When they're in the Olympics, they often have to play Korea, because so far it's been one pool. Mm-hmm. It's like an 8-team pool, and they play everybody. Okay, they've always had to play Korea, and Korea has just got Japan's number. In the Olympics, Japan can't touch them. The only time Japan has won a medal in the Olympics was when Korea wasn't playing.
Yeah. Well, the prevailing opinion that I got from watching TV, from hearing those announcers, from talking to some of the reporters I talked to, and from talking to the players, is that Japan prepares for the WBC, and the teams are much more willing to send their players to the WBC. Obviously, in the United States, we didn't have the Verlanders, the Trouts, the Sabathias, some of the top players playing with the U.S. team. But I don't think that's always necessary. I think you just have to get guys ready. And you know what? It's no secret when the WBC is. Everybody talks about the fact that the Japanese team gets ready and they prepare earlier. I'm like, you know, you knew the dates were set in stone four or 5 years ago. Get ready.
Exactly. Why did the U.S. team came together, 2 days before the tournament started?
Give me a break. Yeah. Get ready, prepare, get out there and play, and I think you'll do better, you know, since you'll be already prepared. Again, people are worried about injuries and all this stuff. If you move, you're going to get hurt. You know, you can stay stationary, you're going to die.
Hey, you know, I got to say this. You know, Curtis Granderson was hurt, and he's out for the season. You know, taking BP on the first day of camp.
As you said last week, yeah.
Okay. And somebody says, if somebody gets hurt in the WBC, that tournament's going to be over. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What an idiot. I'm sorry. You're an idiot, whoever said that.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next question is from Mike in Tokorozawa, our correspondent. He's back. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, Mike, I don't hear you, though. We don't hear that your dulcet tones. We've only got the printed word. Well, we'll have to wait until you send us another MP3.
That's right. We love your MP3s, dude. You sound good. He says, loved your show, your last show on predictions, and I pretty much agree with you on most things. I think Oryx will be better with Itoi, and the Lions will struggle without Nakajima, Hiroyuki Nakajima, who's struggling on his own right now in the States.
Yeah.
And then also Okawari-kun, that's Takeya Nakamura, until he returns. But Wakui needs to bounce back too. And he says, I think Yusei Kikuchi could have a good year. Now, a couple points on stadiums. It seems like everybody liked that stadiums question. on stadiums. I like the sight lines at Seibu much better than Jingu or Tokyo Dome. And a Lions ticket is the cheapest in Japan at 2,000 yen per seat along the baseline. So that's pretty sweet, he says. The question for the show. Oh, he says Yokohama Stadium is his favorite, though. He says The question for the show is, which rookie will have greater impact this year, Sugano or Ohtani?
Go ahead, John. What's your take on that?
My take is, as I said before, Ohtani, I think, can play more. And if he's going to play even if they use him, let's say they use him as a starter, if they use him as a reliever, if he's going to pitch as well as play in the field, he's going to be able to help more than Sugano, who's going to be a once a week pitcher who, you know, he seems like he's going to be a horse and he can log some innings for you. But I still think a guy who's playing two ways is going to have more of an impact. We already know he can pitch. There's no doubt about the fact that he can pitch. So it's just a matter of how much he gets into games as a hitter and is able to produce without getting hurt.
The operative question, the operative word of the question is this year, is who will have the biggest impact this year? And I'm going to bank on the guy who's 4 years older, 5 years older.
Sugano.
Yeah, the guy who's pitched against higher level competition for longer, the guy who's more physically mature.
Yeah, I'm taking the guy who's more talented. You take the mature guy. I'm taking the guy who's more talented.
Yeah, for this year, sure. Do I think Ohtani's more talented? I don't know. I haven't really seen Ohtani play at all. So other than just batting the other day, I can't say. But I think Sugano's a quality pitcher. And I think at his age and maturity, that's an advantage. Ohtani could have a bigger season, but I think the odds are always stacked in favor of the guys who are older. You know, when you compare a 23-year-old to an 18-year-old, that's a big age gap to overcome. Now, if Ohtani is better, that's news. That's okay. Really news. So.
All right, I'm sticking with my pick. I like the athlete. You can take the guy who's working once a week and eating pizza the other days. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Yeah, can you be more pejorative? Try, John.
No,
work on it.
No. We've come to the end of the show, and you know how the producer hates to go over an hour. In fact, the producer is giving me funny looks right now. All right.
Look at the mirror.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for the questions. They were awesome. Please keep them coming, especially the MP3s. You can send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll address them on the show. Waiting for them.
Okay. Look forward to hearing you all next week, and hopefully I won't be so congested.
Yeah, man. Take care of yourself. You can also leave us a comment or question on the Facebook page, and I will try to get to it. Usually Sundays are just too busy. I wanted to write so much today, but I was just too busy at the office. So, but I've been writing some comments. Anthony Pang over in Australia was commenting back and forth with me the other day, so it was pretty good. So we look forward to hearing from you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, great opening week. We'll talk to you next week, and enjoy your baseball.
Bye.